The following is a presentation of Octo Radio, a Star Wars podcast.
How did I choose to win? The question is.
You must learn to see things differently now.
Welcome back, Jedi fugitives in hiding. You know, you grew out your ponytail, you got your saber separated, you're trying to act low-key, but we see you, we hear you, and we're here for you. Welcome back to a rewatch between worlds, our Rebels rewatch series here on Octo Radio, where we are making our way through the first season of Star Wars Rebels right now. I, as always, am Alden Diaz, you know, from this entire podcast feed. And then we also have with us from the Imperial Senate podcast and Yub Nub Club and One and Done Film Club and many a project, honestly. Prolific man right here. The GOAT, Nikki Kumar.
How are you?
I'm good. I always look forward to this. We always do it toward the end of the week or the weekend. And This is just like the perfect way to decompress. I mean, even
really
like listening back to these in the edit or just, you know, thinking about the recons or anything, like this is just like peak comfort Star Wars.
Yeah, I don't think I do any other sort of recording project quite like this. This is very, very relaxing. And it helps because, you know, we're just so crazy about this show that, like, no matter what, when watching an episode of Rebels, it just feels good. You know, it's just, and that's really what it is.
Rebels is like pizza. Like, it's a lot of different kinds, but, like, I'm always down with it. It's just, it has every element, and today we are getting into, and I don't want to say like, oh, this is where the show gets real, but for me, I know my initial Rebels experience, my first watch as it happened on broadcast, I remember, you know, really liking the first one and then, you know, being into the characters and, you know, going with it. And it felt to me like, partially because of the title and partially just because of the, you know, the context of Vader and you know, this Imperial era, knowing it was before A New Hope, it felt like, oh, this is going to be the thing that sets up the rebellion. That became very clear, or at least the rebellion proper. This is the episode that said, this is just as much a Jedi story as it is a Rebel story. It's not just a Rebel group with a fallen Jedi in the group. Like, this is gonna be like just as much of a Jedi epic as the Clone Wars was, as the prequels were. Like, this is gonna have your direct ties. Like, this is gonna introduce new dark side threats in a way that, like, we had seen the Inquisitor, but, you know, he could have just been like a normal Imperial stooge or something like that. Like, this really emphasizes his evil and just sort of like what the journey is gonna be in so many different ways.
For sure. This was a definitely a big moment, and it's like you talk about the Jedi epic. It's like we had no idea what was ahead. Like, my God, the things this show accomplishes with the Force and with the you know, spirit of a true Jedi. Yeah. It's like it's so good. And yeah, this is step one. This felt like a big episode when it happened. Like I remember, like our boys in uniform, they called it Uncle Gazpacho.
Yeah.
they called it Puff the Magic Dragon. Like, that's how big this one was.
Episode would make Ulysses look like it was written in crayon.
Yeah, it's it was a big moment, and a big moment for a lot of reasons, a lot like you just listed, but also a little hint at the fate of a, we'll call it, a legacy character of sorts.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of the first times where we weren't sure to what degree Rebels was going to be connected to maybe the Clone Wars yet.
Right.
And now this was like, bam, okay, wow. I remember just actually being really shocked at the move they pull that we'll get to, of course. And it was a really cool episode. Really, and just cool combat and great character stuff.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that obviously when we get to the scene, but, you know, to build off of what you're saying, it is sort of the first time that Rebels makes its case as not a Clone Wars sequel, but about being as much about all of Star Wars as it is just about the original trilogy setup. Like, it fully utilizes being part of that 19 years, which has become such a focus in Star Wars now with Obi-Wan Kenobi on the horizon, Fallen Order already being a thing, Solo and Rogue One already being things. Like, the comics have built up that era in various different ways with Charles Soule's Vader run. Like, this era has become so rich And for Rebels, you know, being one of the first things to come out in new canon under Disney, it really, I think it was important that they showed something like this. Not because anyone like deserved their Clone Wars follow-up or anything. Like, you know, lots of people were frankly pretty immature about their, you know, their desire for more Clone Wars. So it's like, you know, you don't want to enable any toxicity, but there was, you know, that spirit of giving a nod to the fact that Kanan represents an entire way of life that has gone, you know,
yeah,
needed to be shown,
yeah,
in cool ways.
And I think it's just like, again, it's like this idea of knowing these stories are going to walk hand in hand, right? Like, I think that was an important step for whatever degree anyone was unsure of what the Disney era of Star Wars was going to be like. I think it was like a sign of, I think, good faith, maybe that's the word, the phrase. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, obviously the Clone Wars crew is working on this, mm-hmm, but I think just sort of, yeah, it just sort of showed that, you know, that we're not trying to just do our own thing as Disney, right? Like, it's like, we are here to pick up where we left off.
I think
it was really cool moves in this episode, and then just how it all, it really sets up a lot for the rest of the series as far as the Jedi relationship goes.
For sure. So with all that being said, a delicious preamble, I am so excited to be diving into this one. This is, of course, season 1, episode 5, if you're on Disney Plus, Rise of the Old Masters. We are always watching these on Plus, and we've got them queued up at 000. We are going to do Rebels Recon a little bit later in the show. By now, if you're with us, you know the drill. But if for some reason you're like, I'm starting with Rise of the Old Masters, welcome.
Oh. Like, I love that stuff.
I always mention, you know, this is a commentary over the episode, it's a discussion, but, you know, we sort of let the conversation go where it needs to go. So, you know, if it's a lightsaber action scene or a pew pew scene and we're not directly talking about the pew pew, well, you know, that's sort of where the conversation decided to go in our minds. And I think that's pretty much everything. Again, this is season 1, episode 5, whereas in the actual numbering of this podcast, you know, the podcast is on season 1. It's number 4 of the podcast, but, you know, that our numbering is going to be off because of our 2
people. Yeah. I also feel like when it broadcasted, because I always in my head associate this as episode 4, because I think Spark just ran as one, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is funny on Disney Plus. I'm like, this is episode 5. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is episode 4. It's like, oh,
production, okay. The production numbering and everything. We can all just agree to just let the story dictate what number,
yeah,
something is, because it can be not frustrating, but it can be a little bit odd.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I'm gonna count us in. We always hit play on go. It's gonna be 3, 2, 1, go. So if you're watching along with us, welcome. Let's have a good time and let's dive into Rise of the Old Masters in 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. Some of that good Jedi shit.
Yeah, this is just a great opening.
I love the idea of it, like, floating too, right? Like, they're not just, it's not parked. Landed. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a neat way to use, like, minimal, again, this show's so smart, like, minimal assets. It's just the ghost and, mm-hmm, you know, your characters and some clouds, but it's such a mythic, like, wow, he's doing Jedi training on a ship that's in the air. Like, that's the type of stuff that, mm-hmm, you couldn't do necessarily during Empire Strikes Back when you were training in a swamp, but it's in the spirit of that Dagobah training.
Yeah.
You know, you see a Jedi, you know, standing on their hands, you immediately think of,
mm-hmm, real. And we got the Yoda stats. Shout out right, yeah, there, right? Like, it's super funny. And it, again, just another cool way to ground Kanan and then what we know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's Kanan talking about Zeb. He's annoying. There'll always be distractions. That's great. And then him getting to, I forgot, I always forget that he doesn't get his saber for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
He said laser sword. They don't, uh-oh, even care. It's like they don't even care. Ezra, that was a bonehead move.
That's peak, like, Luke looking down the thing.
Yeah, oh, exactly.
Ooh, there you go.
Now, is this one, I was thinking, up until actually Star Wars Visions, is this one of the only times that we've seen the length adjustment used on screen?
Yeah, I think so. And they also do something, I think, in season two where they, like, don't they, like, activate a training mode on their lightsabers?
They
do. When they're, like, fighting each other?
Ahsoka does, right? Or
Ahsoka something like Ezra, that. It's, or... like, some. It's near the end of... It's Kanan and Ezra are fighting.
Kanan and Ezra.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, they did say they have something, which I don't think it's ever been brought up again.
More of a sting or a burn. And yeah. It's the kind of stuff that we know is in Star Wars lore because, you know, we're the kids that grew up reading the encyclopedias and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you always looked at a diagram of a lightsaber and saw a length adjustment. And I remember as a kid being like, oh, why don't you make it a giant lightsaber? Yeah. You know, dumb kid stuff. Yeah. But
it is really cool to think about, though. Yeah. Because it's like, you know, Anakin, I guess Anakin did go through several lightsabers, but for the sake of the thing, it's like he made the lightsaber. Or we'll say Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan made his first lightsaber when he's a kid, right? And then that lightsaber's got to take you through, you know, ideally, adulthood. For your career. Ideally, of course.
If everything goes as planned, like, yeah, that'll be your thing. And yeah,
it really just makes sense.
And people in the High Republic make adjustments to theirs over time a lot, and you hear about that. And then there's, you know, but it's an age thing, and it's also a species thing. Like, Mariaga's is kind of like a claymore. Like, he's got to adjust that length so it goes all the way.
Yeah, yeah.
What he's doing, stylistically.
Freaking Chopper.
Chopper was the peak chaos. He literally, we just saved him, and he throws one at his head anyway.
Oh, man.
The Tuca Cat cutaways are always great in the show. There's just something like supremely Star Wars about that. Like, I think of that shot in Force Awakens when BB-8 rolls away and little buddy pokes his head out of the sand.
Oh, yeah.
An alien. Just establishing that the planet is like teeming with life.
Yeah. And if you're playing Fallen Order, you can kill it all.
Lots of slaughter. Lots and lots.
I just love, I give it a hard time for that. But like, I do just love the absolute like dichotomy between that and Ezra's story.
Yeah.
Right? Ezra's so unique in his ability to tap into wildlife and and nature and understand it. And, you know, we were thinking a lot about the Village Bride, right. And being in harmony with nature. And it's like, man, that's just
basically just feels what we're so saying here is what we're saying here is that Ezra's going to beat Cal Kestis's ass one day.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Now here's Gal Travis, recurring political characters similar to Tua, who we've already met.
Mm-hmm.
Rebels does a good job of sort of fleshing out because you know the original trilogy. You know those are 2-hour movies. They got to move. They can only give lip service to their Imperial Senate and all the people. Like Rebels does a good job of introducing like some of those faces, similarly to how Rogue One does. And but yeah, this Luminara bit here, Kanan,
you
a lot of credit. We know that she was not necessarily the best at connecting with people.
it's a fascinating thought experiment too, right? Like, what if this did work out? And what if he did try to have or her? Like, right? Like, what if she was there? And you know, jumping ahead a little, and you know, how would she relate to someone like Ezra? I don't think she'd do very well.
No, because he sort of is not like he's just like Trace and Rafa or Ahsoka or anything, but he has that young rascal type thing that she doesn't really gel with. Like, Barriss really was the perfect apprentice for her because they have such similar demeanors.
And it's just like, you need these like two lost boys to be there for each other, right? And it's like, I feel like she, you know, She's one of those, you know, Jedi masters who don't help with the best looks for the Jedi Order, you know.
Not necessarily Employee of the Month material.
Yeah.
This whole
also this is cool. Scene, this is really cool. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. This design for the prison and this all like it again. We see this in Mandalorian and other Star Wars stories of the era, like to get an idea sort of like all these Imperial installations and how many different kinds of, you know, again, give a shout to Fallen Order does that with was it Planet Nur, the one that's right by Mustafar, the Inquisitorious base and all that. I might have the planet name wrong, but
yeah
that that type of stuff is always fun and visually interesting. And I love the dialogue there.
Okay. Yeah. I was just gonna say, we see the Stygian prison in the Son of Dathomir comic.
That's right.
Which was cool. So again, it's like, you know, Clone Wars and Rebels doing this cool idea often of, you know, trading ideas. Because probably the Stygian prison was a Clone Wars idea before Rebels idea. And so, you know, it just sort of fits in. Like the way the ghost's cockpit is actually the asset of the Silver Angel that was going to be, or is eventually Trace and Rafa's ship. And so like it's cool that we're definitely in that phase of Rebels taking Clone Wars ideas now.
Absolutely. And in this break-in scenario, which I love, in the planning, when Sabine says that it's impregnable, all Game of Thrones fans immediately react to that. I know that you and I
they just both look back at Bronn.
Yeah, you just like
in the hallway.
Bronn's in the cockpit of the ghost. Yeah. Like, give me, was it 10 good men and climbing spikes?
Yeah.
I'll impregnate the bitch.
Oh, Bronn. Uh-oh. Look, if I was a stormtrooper, I'd be like immediately calling for help. Like I'd see like my buddy get punched and I'd just be like, help, 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 help.
Oh, for sure.
I never understand that. Stormtrooper mentality. They're not the best. These ain't the best TKs. They're not trained by the commandos anymore.
Nope. These are the grunts, the true grunts.
I love that move.
Oh, the force action. Yeah, that's great. Rebels also is a show that more than a lot of Star Wars gives you hand-to-hand combat. A lot of the times it's for a specific reason like this, like, you know, trying to do more espionage type things.
You need to steal someone's armor.
Yeah.
A lot of good punching in Rebels, for sure.
For sure.
Zeb loves punching. Sabine's a good hand-to-hand.
And, you know, it's interesting, too. You know, you talked about and you made such great points I never thought of about, like, you know, in a what if scenario, what if Luminara was alive and did get to train as a Bridger. But looking at it from the Kanan angle, it's like, it's so important. I mean, you don't want to be like, it's important that she's dead, good. but it's important that no matter what master this was, no matter what scenario this was, that it doesn't work. That needs to be important for Kanan, because he needs to have this journey of, no, it needs to be you, man. It needs to be you. You can't pawn him off.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's a like perfect textbook example of making sure the stakes are on who matters.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, Luminara, but
yeah,
you know,
I mean, maybe
you don't matter. You don't matter here.
Luminara, a Star Wars story. I don't know. I'd watch it, but like, yeah, not this episode.
Yep.
And it's something that we see a lot of the times in different, you know, in different fantasy fiction, but even in Star Wars, you know, Last Jedi with Luke, like, I can't train you. Someone needs to teach you. I can't teach you, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, all right, let's do some lessons, because the gravity of the situation has put us together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Hera, you wonderful, wonderful character.
Hera's such a boss for someone who has to like stay in park for probably a lot of missions.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like it actually is like a different kind of like superpower to have the restraint to be ready and stuff.
Restraint and the ability to, you know, keep your cool while situations are going right. Like right here with this creature, I forget what they're called.
I don't remember.
Let me pull it up right now just while he's on screen, because that's a wonderful creature design.
Yeah.
That I really, really like.
And they want to get it. They want to get it on with the old Phantom here.
it's a good looking little shuttle. And again, it plays into, even though this isn't Lothal, like it still plays into those themes that this whole show is about. Of as the Empire, you know, is finally being threatened, you know, after being unchallenged for over a decade. Now they're finally, the spark of rebellion is happening.
Yeah.
It is also in part because the natural world pushes back a little bit.
Right.
Which is something that we see like in Visions with like La Pinocho and like that entire story. Like that's the type of stuff that is super important.
I love that. Yes. I love that.
Yeah.
Pointing that out.
That's great stuff. Yeah. Because to Ezra, it's let's find someone you used to work with and used to know. For Kanan, it's maybe all the suffering I've been through.
Yeah.
Maybe there is another survivor. Maybe we're not done. Maybe we didn't fully lose.
And it's also his fear of having to take responsibility for this kid.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole lot for him.
Mm-hmm. That's a great fear right there. Much better than I could teach you. And it's like, well, you're going to need to believe in yourself, man. And this right here is this like
early. This is heavy metal.
Early, like, force projection stuff. Like,
yeah.
You know, obviously a different type of dark side version. You know,
yeah.
It's illusion trickery. But this is sort of the first instances of powers that we would see someone mm-hmm. like Luke use later on.
Oh my God. That is a hardcore transition.
Yeah.
That's one of those moments where you're like, oh, this isn't the child, like as skewed child show as people are trying to make this out to be.
Yes, precisely. This is doing full on mature. Mature is the wrong word, but it has the full trappings of fantasy.
Yeah.
I guess is the best way to say it. Like,
or it's just like not hiding anything. Part. Like, it's not trying to sugarcoat. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, New Hope is freaking scary at times. You know, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru being charred.
Charred
like,
skeletons. Yeah.
Charred skeletons. You know, Fellowship of the Ring is scary often.
Like, oh, yeah.
That type of stuff needs to happen.
There are still scenes in Fellowship that I'm less inclined to watch.
Yeah. It's looking at you, Bilbo and Rivendell. Yeah. Like,
dude, popping the Uruk-hai out of that like stuff.
Oh, the mud sack thing.
Like, I'm like never into that. Never into that. Also, seeing red versus blue lightsabers for the first time in this show was really pretty.
And the first time in Star Wars canon at the time.
Yeah, there we go.
I love Ezra at least trying to contribute with his slingshot, but also this sort of Inquisitor characterization. I mean, first of all, Isaac's incredible, which we've already
seen
in our rewatch, but just phenomenal. But I love that bit with using the explosive.
Mm-hmm.
But giving the Inquisitor that analytical style that, you know, at the time they hadn't brought Thrawn back in, and at the time Gideon wasn't created. So it's like, maybe it's less special now that there are more villains that are doing mm-hmm. it. Of the, I know who trained you, and I know everything about you, and blah, blah, blah.
And I think, is that the first, like, canonical throwing of a bone on lightsaber forms?
Yeah, I'm going to say
at least in, like, visual media.
At least that I can remember.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's someone out there that's like, no, because of, you know, Weapon of the Jedi, that novel, or Heir to the Jedi is the novel. Weapon of the Jedi is the young readers. But, yeah, so maybe not, but definitely visually, for sure, I think. Have you taught him nothing?
Yeah.
Like, I came here to get him teaching. That's a great bit.
That's always the sign of a great Star Wars villain. Mm-hmm. Just being able to make those jabs at insecurities. I mean, just any villain, really. Like, that's good. It's a good villain dialogue. Again, this stuff shows like this accomplished in 20 minutes.
it sickens
me.
Oh, by the way, I pulled up the name and forgot to say it. They're called Tibidee, by the way.
Tibidee.
Tibidee.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And, you know, a lot of this show is also about our journeys with Rebels and with the stuff that it introduces. So I'm curious, take me back to 2014, Nikki, and tell me how you felt about Helicopter Saber.
It reminded me of a toy that existed where it was like, I can't remember if it was like a Grievous, General Grievous, like lightsaber toy or a build your own toy. And it had the, like, this middle bit. And I'm pretty sure it, like, was circular and could spin. Just reminded me of that. I didn't feel like, I know some people really took it to heart when, especially when they started flying with it.
Yes.
I think, because that's not till season two. The spinning thing doesn't bother me at all. I think that's pretty cool. And, like, a cool way of, you know, these guys aren't as force powerful.
Yeah, like they have it, but they also need to rely on extras.
Yeah, so like it's just that extra added bit of threat onto them. So like
they're somewhere, but they are the middle ground between a Sith Lord and someone like Grievous.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And so I think it
which
was
Grievous does. He does way. Spin in Revenge of the Sith. So it's like, it's not unprecedented. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. a different way.
Yeah. I think it's just a cool way to make Inquisitors different. And yeah, when it comes to them flying, I don't care.
It's like, really? I mean,
I really don't.
Yeah, like, I don't care. And also, like, if you want to be nitty-gritty about it, it's the Force that's doing it. They're falling with style. They're not flying.
Yeah. And it's like, it just, you know, you... Because that's Twilight of the Apprentice. It's like, it's hard to find fault in Twilight of the Apprentice. No, and it's like, perfect. You know, you need to get them around this insane geography. Mm-hmm. It's like, come on, just roll with
and
it, man.
I'm pretty sure that Dooku, like, at least levitates and floats more than mm-hmm. once. And he doesn't even have a spinny, so what yeah. about that?
Yeah,
well, that canon, junkies. I still am, like, you know, I know we're watching the episode, but, like, it's been a long time since I've seen this one, and I am pretty shook about the fact that the Inquisitor does a dark side, like, Force illusion, and, like, no one talks about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty boss move.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that we haven't seen, like, in anything, I'm pretty sure.
Aside
from Luke doing it, but...
How many people... Do you think they got with that trick?
Oh, me? They got me? You know?
No. I mean, in universe. Do you think other Force users sensed that and went and got trapped and off?
Yeah, that's true. Like, it could. This could be how Quinlan Voss died. This could be how. I mean, I don't want that, but like, it, you know, I want him to have an actual story. But like, it's true. Like, this could have been the downfall of a lot of people, and this could be happening in more than one location.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, yes. I love it. Hera in the Phantom with the Tibidi. It's just, again, peak natural world. This is the first example, and it goes on and on and on with Loth cats, with Loth wolves, with
the Purrgil and the Mining Guild.
Purrgil. Even when it's not necessarily an ally situation, still making the connections, like on... outside of Chopper Base when he's meeting the Bendu and he has to connect with the spiders and everything. Mm-hmm. So
that's a great Zeb line. For a Zeb Light episode, they always know when to just give that little bit of love.
For sure. And you also have to wonder, like, this is Ezra's episode where he says, like, when do I get a lightsaber? And now he sees Kanan's more standard one, but then he sees how it can be different. You got to wonder if he maybe took some inspiration from the Grand Inquisitor. Like, I can make one that's a little bit weirder.
Yeah.
That brings you to the Gunblade later on. But I say Gunblade like it's Final Fantasy. you know what I mean. But yeah. This is a great bit here too, because this is like the, I don't want to be a burden. You know, I don't want to ruin your life. And by, you know, this is so mythic.
Mm-hmm. I love things like this, and I think it's from being a Harry Potter book reader from a young age, where every book, until, you know, it can't happen anymore, ends with a debrief from Dumbledore. And I think these scenes are always so important for young viewers / young characters, right? To have a mentor be able to sit down and dispute, like, so let's unpack that.
Oh, for sure.
It's so good.
You know, we cited Fellowship of the Ring. Like, in that one 3-hour movie, there are multiple instances of this. Like,
yeah,
even when you get to, like, it's not the end of the journey. Like, this to me is sort of like Rivendell. Like, we haven't actually left and Gandalf still debriefs him. Or it's Frodo and Sam talking, and Frodo's like, you know, we did everything we set to do. We got the ring to Rivendell. And it's like, oh, how you wish that was the actual journey.
Yeah.
Like, and that this now is, we've taken, this is the fifth/fourth episode. We've had adventures already. And now we've had a brush with the dark side. And now the training starts. Like, we haven't actually begun our journey together. And this is the commitment. And it's two guys admitting now that they do need each other. They do appreciate each other. Or more so Kanan admitting, that he has it in him to make these choices. Even if he doesn't believe it, it's a leap of faith.
Yeah.
The show's good.
Who'd have thought?
It's kind of controversial take. Yeah. The show's really good. I do want to say, I went to the Wikipedia for this episode to find out that the name of that creature is the Nativity. And while I was here, I noticed that there is a certain actor that plays Gal Travis. Do you know who it is?
Ooh, is it Brett Spiner?
It's Brett Spiner.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that until today.
That's a funny one. Yeah.
I'm shocked by this.
I knew it was someone like, it was, oh yeah, yeah. I didn't think about it until you brought it up that it was someone. I was like, oh man, is it someone like, it was someone of sci-fi pedigree.
Yeah, like now and then, I have to be on guest star watch.
Yeah.
Just in case. I had no idea that Brent Spiner was in the show. I wonder if he pops up in any other roles, but I guess I go to his Wikipedia and see if he's in other Star Wars things, but that is fascinating. Oh, you know what? It says here, this makes sense then. He previously collaborated with Rebels writer Greg Wiseman on Gargoyles and on Young Justice. So yeah, I guess if they were already buds, bring him to come over. He might also be the first Trek person to make the jump to Star Wars.
Yeah, that's wasn't good... happening.
That didn't really happen pre-Disney.
No.
To my knowledge.
And I can't think of really many instances of that. We just had one.
Star Wars?
that's like a good trivia question, right? Oh, like goodness.
This is a fun
That is, because it's almost like it's one of those things where it's like you could believe it.
Right.
But also I can't think it.
Like, Leonard Nimoy was in freaking Michael Bay's Transformers. Like, he wasn't above doing random, random
stuff. Leonard Nimoy sang a song about Bilbo.
That's a fact. That might be his real greatest contribution. Now, who was the recent one that you were talking about, Trek?
George Takei. Oh,
that's right. That's right. Yeah. Oh, that was a great one, too. Yeah, and this began the trend of Rebels slowly but surely plucking sci-fi fantasy legends for bit parts.
Yeah.
Obviously the Bendu's a big one with Tom Baker.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm McDowell comes in later on for season 4. Lots of good stuff.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay. Trek and here's a good little fun thing. Trek and Star Wars crossovers.
Mm.
Greg Grunberg in Beyond and Force Awakens. Let's see. Okay. We're getting into smaller things here. Brian George.
Mm-hmm.
Played Ki-Adi Mundi in Clone Wars and is the father of Julian Bashir in Deep Space Nine. Yeah, they're not big names. George Coe played someone in looks like Next Generation or First Contact, which is not the movie, but the episode First Contact. He played one of the Lerman guys. Olivia Dabo plays someone in Next Generation. She plays Luminara in Simon Pegg. There we go. That's the bigger name.
Yeah, that's true.
Deep Roy, the stunt double.
Love Deep Roy.
He played Droopy McCool.
Has Jonathan Frakes ever shown up in Star Wars? Because like Jonathan Frakes playing like an admiral or like, you know, you don't want
that'd to be so metal
again, but like, you know, something yeah. like that, like a grizzled pilot or something.
Yeah.
That'd be so cool.
No, again, Clancy Brown played some Trek characters. Sam Witwer was in Trek?
Really?
Sam Witwer played somebody in Enterprise, just some dude in the background.
Oh, that must have been so early for him.
Ron Perlman.
Okay.
He was, what's it, Caxis or something? Oh, no, that's someone else. The guy who scavenges R2 and takes him to Grievous.
Okay.
In early Clone Wars, and he was in Nemesis.
Right.
Oh, George Takei was, I forgot about that. He was already a Star Wars character. He was the Nemoidian who had the incinerator thing and again, the Lerman episode.
There you go.
Ian Abercrombie was in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Ed Begley was a Bovis. David Burney.
Oh, hey, Jason Isaacs.
Hey, I wonder if he's at the bottom of this list.
Shout out to Lorca, man.
There we go. Clive Revel.
Oh, the original Palpatine.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of just like small roles. Wow, they didn't put Isaacs. Maybe this is older than Discovery.
Probably, yeah. Well, that was a fun little tangent.
There we go.
How about this? Now that I can add Q&As to our episodes on Spotify. It's a Spotify exclusive feature. So if you're listening on Apple, obviously doesn't apply to you. I don't expect you to leave Apple. I don't expect really anyone to leave Apple. But if you're listening on Spotify, congratulations, because now there are polls and questions if you scroll down. So I'm going to leave a question on this one. I'll remind myself in the edit here. Future Alden, add this question. What Star Trek actors would you like to appear in Star Wars, and how would you use them? Obviously, we already dropped Jonathan Frakes. I think it would be super cool to see Michelle Yeoh in Star Wars. But put Michelle Yeoh in everything, really.
Oh, yeah. Franchise queen.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Zoe Saldana always says that she just needs Star Wars to complete her
Infinity Gauntlet.
So that she would be another big one.
That'd be great. Yeah.
I know Pine is in so many things, but I'd love Chris Pine in Star Wars, even if it was just a voice role or something.
Yeah. He just has such a good Han Solo energy.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be great. He'd fit immediately into
Chris Pine as Dash Rendar. Let him goof it up a little bit.
I mean, it'd be like Into the Woods Chris Pine.
Yes. You get exactly what
which,
I mean.
If you're listening and you've not seen Into the Woods, that was not an invitation to go watch Into the Woods.
No. Oh yeah, please. Yeah, disclaimer, we're not encouraging that.
Yeah, just
go.
Just YouTube, take our word for it.
Yeah.
That's
all you need to do. That's good stuff.
A lot of great options. Yeah.
We are going to move on to Rebels Recon. And then we'll do our own debrief after that and sort of talk about our feelings on the episode, how it made us feel. If anyone hears any dog's toy squeak, that's because Mando, the official dog of the Octo Radio podcast feed, is currently trying to make me play with him while we're recording. I'm not even going to edit this out. Normally, I'll edit out Mando barks and stuff, but he's just having a good old time playing with his little toy here. So
must let him be.
Yeah, let's let him be. Okay, so we are moving over to Rebels Recon number 1.04. Inside Rise of the Old Masters. These are always fun because, as we've already learned, sometimes we get con footage we forgot about. We get to see the outfits that people used to wear, like Dave and Taylor Gray and everything. So let's see who pops up in this one. And we're going to count you in, same as the episode. That's 3, 2, 1, go.
Oh, dope shirt, Andy.
Yeah, the same reaction. Oh. Andy with the swag. Ooh, look at all that concept art.
That is really cool. Day-day-day.
Can't wait to hear Dave defend himself for that Luminara subterfuge. Ooh, with the dig.
Mm-hmm. Metal.
Yeah, Andy, way to undersell that. Instead of finding the Jedi Master, they find a new enemy. Yeah, instead of finding the Jedi Master, they found a mummified corpse.
Yeah.
And then they found the new... Man, this goes...
Can you imagine staging these?
I want to tour this place so badly.
Yeah. Hey, Andy, just sit there. Sit there. We'll record this shot here.
Yeah, right? Oh, it's great.
Joel Aaron's a
this is
a madman.
Such good insight that the blade has the same the energy emitting, the same flicker. That's Lucasfilm animation. Oh, look at this man. Dave
still got that
now that they shot this on the same day. He's got his wolf sweater on. Dave, bring back the wolf sweater, man. I know you're into jackets now, but you could still do this look.
Hey, I'm just gonna throw this out of here. Joel Aaron is the Roger Deakins of animation.
Ooh. You know what? We're going to get Joel Aaron on the show. I'm going to start working on that immediately.
There you go.
I'm not even joking. Like,
there we go.
Mark it, people. I said it in this episode. Joel Aaron's coming on.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when, but we're going to get him. Because I agree with that. I mean, when you look at, by the time Bad Batch was airing, it was like once a week that I was like, oh my God.
Yeah,
this looks incredible.
And he's one of those guys also with such a catalog of knowledge to where he can be like, I thought of this movie, we wanted to emulate this feeling from this movie for this story for blah, blah, blah. And it's like,
and
yeah,
how,
it's
like,
it's so key.
How unsung is cinematography and animation?
Yeah,
because when you say the word cinematography, you picture someone on set. Nobody thinks of the fact that you still need to do you know, painterly moments. You still need to find your characters, find your angles, find your close-ups, find the ability to bring the camera back. Like, you still have to direct. And that's what George taught.
I have the set.
Taught, is this the first one? The first one you ever did? That's awesome.
Yeah.
They ended up doing two, right?
They did two because the first one released Kanan with black hair, and then they re-released to get the right hair. So now your black hair Kanan is a very expensive, hard to find minifig. Yeah.
I was the Inquisitor, not a Sith. This is like the first time that we had these kinds of questions in this era. Pablo.
Pablo's just trying to get a snack in the...
I was about to say, like, this is the beginning of the we're going to interview him wherever he is.
Yeah.
It wasn't yet a bit, but it was getting there. This is a nice little cafeteria area.
Dude. This place is just like this Mecca.
This is Wonka's factory.
Right here. It's just like it's the key pilgrimage, you know.
Oh man. But yeah, I mean, cinematography definitely something that we could talk about more too as we go on, because there's so much good stuff. I mean, this is not Star Wars related, but like just this past week at the time of this recording, we were freaking out about how good What If looked and some of the shots and everything. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes from trusting animation, giving them the money that they need to be able to create.
Yeah. And Rebels, you know, is famously the show that was perhaps hampered the most by a budget, right? And so just the things they're able to achieve already is just, it's stellar.
Fantastic.
9 p.m., baby, Mondays.
9 p.m. Monday. Hashtag Rebels Recon. Go to the episode guide at StarWars.com, which you can still do. All that stuff's still up. And it, a lot of the times you can find a lot of joy and a lot of fun in going back to those episode guides. Because there is not a company in the world in entertainment more generous with their assets than Star Wars. Star Wars is like, hey, you just met this character. Here's all the design sheets and the code name that we had him under on our computer and the notes that we left ourselves. And
that was a really great part of Rebels fandom, especially late on, when I think Tracy Canobio would be like, hey, what design sheets do you want to see?
Yeah.
Specifically with a mind for cosplayers.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cosplayers want to know what shade that is.
Yeah.
It's like, you know,
we're gonna help you because
here's the official.
It just everybody to be that way. Like it's just super helpful. And Mando, you have opinions? Mando's like, on my toy, man. I don't care about Star Wars Rebels. Mando, you're a wolf wolf, man.
We haven't gotten there yet. He's waiting. He's biding his time.
I don't know what that is. But yeah, so tell me, coming away from this episode, obviously we get that Kanan and Ezra moment of, probably the first moment of clarity. You know, it's not really a massive step, but that clarity needs to come before any training can begin. So where does this fall for you in terms of the Jedi story, in terms of your perception of Jedi stories, and, you know, talk a little bit about the Inquisitor as a villain. What are you taking away from this, especially in retrospect, now that you know where it's all going?
Yeah, I think it's definitely important. It's not quite peak actualization yet, right? But it is that, I think you pointed to the Last Jedi when Luke accepts, you know, she's here.
Yeah.
I know I should do this kind of thing, right? Like, it feels very much like that. It's like, it is the door has creaked open.
Right.
And it's like, we're ready to explore it. And I think it's a good character moment for Kanan because, it is the acceptance that, like, maybe I can't do this.
Yeah.
But that's not a reason to stop.
Exactly.
And so I think it's a really special moment, and it's early too, which is which is cool. And I think we've talked before about how small this season is compared to certainly 2 and 3. And, you know, they move pretty fast. They get things going. And so I think it's cool that that Kanan was able to express that to Ezra and just sort of be, you know, it's the Carrie quote, right? The be afraid, do it anyway kind of thing. And
For sure.
And I think that's really important for Kanan to say out loud to Ezra, because it sort of has to be the same for Ezra. It's like, none of us really know what we're doing here, and that's okay. And we'll figure it out.
And Rebels is so much about the spirit of continuous learning. Kanan is, by all rights, a Padawan. His 12-issue comic series is called The Last Padawan. And at least of this era and of who we knew of at the time, that was true. I mean, Cal and other people are running around. Sure. Ahsoka, whatever you want to say. But the fact that he has to reconcile with the fact that his training is not done.
Yeah.
And that sometimes training, like how Yoda put Ahsoka into Anakin's life on purpose, that type of stuff needs to happen. Like, this is his moment of the order is gone. You need to learn in different ways. And maybe this wasn't the path that you would have been on if there was no Order 66. Maybe you wouldn't have taken a Padawan on until you were gray in the beard. But we're not in that fantasy world now. We're in the real world, and this kid needs you. And you could probably learn something here, even if you're afraid that you're not up to it. Because so much of it is about, I'm going to lead the kid astray. But so much of it is also, I'm broken and unfinished. And, you know, Depa wasn't able to give me everything that she had in her because she was killed.
And, and I'm going to open up wounds that I've tried to bandage.
It's just, it's peak. I mean, that's the archetype that you and I are attracted to. It's something that I harp on a lot about, of the Hamlet-esque, it's Hamlet-esque. It's also Children of Destiny running away from things like Aragorn and Simba and like all that stuff. You need to come back, you know, to, I think, what's that quote? It's like, to go far is to go something. And then, but to go home is to return, or it's something like that. Someone out there is like, that's a very important quote. You should know it. but you get what I mean.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, really getting to see the Inquisitor as the in-your-face threat, I think is super cool. And I think for me, still, the Inquisitor's best moments are at the end of his time. And so it's still very much like a learning phase right now. You're on your first date in this episode with the Inquisitor,
right?
And you're kind of like, oh, okay, I see and what also, you're about. Like,
correct me if I'm wrong, but we had no knowledge. Like, they hadn't said in press or anything that he was the leader of a group, right?
As in like the Grand Inquisitor?
Yeah.
Did they title him that?
Well, even if he said that, like Filoni or Pablo, no one had said that there was an Inquisitorius. Like, isn't it like, as it stands right now in 2014, we were watching this thinking he was a singular villain.
I don't fully remember.
I think
I remember them saying he's the Inquisitor, and then them either saying or the connection being made that this was a Legends concept of a group.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe like just sort of intrinsically back of the mind, you're thinking there could be more.
Yeah.
But I think, if we're going to take the show face value, I don't think there's anything to suggest that.
Right. Like here, he sort of feels functionally like, oh, is this guy, especially if you're coming off of, I loved all the games, I read Legends, like, and let me try this new canon out. I could see people thinking like, is he this the replacement for Starkiller? Like, is this Vader's apprentice?
Yeah.
Because he answers to him on screen. So he's an interesting commodity to unpack. And then obviously by the time season two comes around, you've got Sarah Michelle Gellar coming in to play one. We got like two or three more and like all.
I think on, so. Maybe the first indicator is when Palpatine's like dispatch more Inquisitors. Maybe that's like the first actually like said out loud time that it's like, oh, there's more of these. But it's super interesting. And I think we're still at this time where we didn't fully know what level this guy could achieve.
Right.
Because I think, you know, there's a multiverse timeline where this guy is the bad guy for the entirety of Rebels, right?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting to think about put yourself back in.
And again, it's
whenever this came out, October 2014, and trying to think about what are the stakes on this guy.
And because of Kanan's choices, right? Like Luminara being dead and him not being able to dump Ezra on her is one thing, but it's the choice to say, okay, it has to be me. That still comes from within. He doesn't necessarily have to. There is a timeline maybe where Kanan, and by the way, we're not being literal. Like, please don't start with the Star Wars multiverse stuff. we're not saying that.
But
there is a version of the story where Kanan says, well, let's look for someone else, you know, like where he still denies the call.
Yeah. But
because he answers the call, he can beat the Grand Inquisitor. There's a direct line between this choice to do it yourself and I have nothing left to fear.
Yeah.
He's got both lightsabers and he can actually beat him. If this had been a Kanan Jarrus that had denied the call, he probably would have been unbalanced enough that Grand Inquisitor could take him out.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's all
about... Or break him in the cell.
Or break him in the cell and turn him or whatever they want to do. Star Wars is so much about the fight ends before the sabers actually clash.
Yeah. You
know, like
it's in the head.
The decisions are all happening before the chess is all happening. You know, they say in wrestling, it's been a thing that they've been saying for 30 years that the Undertaker beats you before he gets in the ring, you know, the entrance and the mind games and the theatricality.
Yeah.
By the time he's halfway down the ramp, walking all slow, they'll usually cut to wrestlers in the ring and they'll, you know, the performance aspect, they'll have them like eyes wide, like, no, like,
right.
Like, that's when the fight is over.
It's a really cool thing. Like they, people talk about that in soccer as well. When you're going up against, you know, the champions, the teams, the great teams, and they'll people like opposition players would be like, we'd be in the tunnel lined up next to him, looking at him and knowing we'd lost.
Yeah.
Like we just knew.
I never occurred to me that they had to come from the same entrance tunnel.
Yeah. They, COVID sort of changed it up a little because they weren't like,
and people are traveling
punched up, but like they'll be side by side and come out together. And it's like, yeah, I mean,
oh, so it's not like American football where a team comes out of one end and then
no,
wow,
they'll come out the same entrance.
There's honor in that.
Yeah. And yeah, there's, it's just cool. Again, it's like that dynamic, you know,
like
the great teams,
the All Blacks doing a haka and
right. Right.
That's where they win all their games.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just cool. Yeah, the mind is where the fight really takes place.
Absolutely, and that's such a key theme here in all of Star Wars, and I think it's a great note to wrap on. Unless there's anything else you want to say about this episode, again, light for the other characters, but intentionally so. This is a show that does a great focus rotation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everybody needs to be the A thing, and then as we saw at the end of Recon, next week we go to Skystrike, right? That's the name?
No, it's just the Lothal one.
Just the Lothal one. Okay. The Skystrike is something. Oh, Skystrike from the Thrawn.
That's like the fighter pilot.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's where Sabine goes to get Wedge.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd say
that. Yeah.
In any case, yeah, this is the one that I think created a lot of dumb fan stuff that we'll talk about because that's always fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like retrospective theory bashing. Like
there's a great character I love in introducing this next one that is not.
Kid?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Zare Leonis. I really like Zare.
Now you remember the dumb 2014 fan theories, like Leonis must be related to Finn.
Oh yeah.
Or is Finn, even though that's not how aging works.
Yeah. Well, our Zare talk will be focused on who he actually is within Rebels. and an interesting way they told his story outside of the show. So yeah, it'll be cool to walk through Breaking Ranks.
Absolutely. So for right now, Nikki, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you across this desolate wasteland we call the internet?
Absolutely. Twitter, the most desolate of all wastelands, at Nikuicious, NAKUICIOUS. That is my personal account. You can follow the Imperial Senate podcast at Imp Senate Pod and all the cool places you catch your podcasts. And you can also catch both of us and our friend Reed on the One and Done Film Club at One Letter N Done Show on Twitter. You can find that on cool podcast catchers as well. And we got some cool stuff coming up. Super excited to jump into all that.
Absolutely. Season 2 One and Done is going to be awesome. We've got exciting stuff coming up with the Lego Star Wars Terrifying Tales. And crossover is going to be happening between Octo Radio and the Imperial Senate Patreon show, The Sacred Jedi Bricks. And that's Nikki and our friend Reed as well. So look forward to that. If you are already into Terrifying Tales and you've been excited about it, you can check out Tori and I interviewing the writer and director. We got to do an interview exclusive with them, which is a lot of fun. Tori's going to be coming soon. She's got life stuff going on, as we all do. So she's cooking, though, and the Mandatorian Creed will be back, probably with some one-offs, as well as the Star Tours series that's been gestating. There's going to be some fun Oxford Radio interviews coming up. I just had Emma Mieko Kanden, who's the writer of Ronin, on the show to talk about Visions, talk about Ronin, talk about that character, the process of writing the novel. Coming up, we've got Ed Greer from Comedy Central and Fandom and Reboot It and The Greatest Pod talking about Mandalorian predictions for season three, talking about the Mandalorian culture as a whole, the journey, basically just a huge Mandalorian deep dive. So that's all stuff that I'm pretty sure is either locked, loaded, confirmed. Other stuff in the works, as always. Always in motion is the future and all that good stuff. So for right now, follow us on Twitter, AD_Strider for me, Octo Radio, AHCHTO Radio. And right now, we're going to close it out with our favorite closing ever, because it was handed to us by the Rebels writers. Loth Rat, Loth Cat, Loth Wolf Run, Pick a Path, and all is done. Catch you next time.